I'm TJ.
I'm Will.
And this is
Real Talk Sports.
And today we have a special guest with us, one of the best sports intellectuals here, runs GW Sports. And ladies and gentlemen, Richard Martin. Thank you for joining us today, Richard.
Hey, no problem. Thank y'all for letting me be on here. Let me have.
Well, what can so far with GW Sports, with winter still going on, coming close to an end, and spring coming up, what can you say so far about Gardner-Webb Sports right now?
It's going to be a fun time. I think there's, in about 2 weeks, there's going to be about 7 games here on campus of just our teams between tennis, basketball, baseball, and softball at some point. So you need to stay on campus in about 2 weeks. It's going to be a fun time. Baseball will be starting, softball getting rolling, and then basketball and tennis will keep on going. So it's going to be a really fun time here on campus soon.
It really will. And judging by, Will, you got stats for men's basketball. The men's basketball have won 2 straight games in a row. What do you two have to say about how they've been lately?
Well, I have to say that they've been improving so far. Their record is now 13-11, hoping to make it an even 14 as they get ready to host Longwood on Saturday. They had an incredible win against Campbell, 80-68, when LaQuincy Rideau scored 21 points, Tyrell Nelson with 13, and Liam O'Reilly with 11, with 3 3-pointers.
What do you have to say about what Gardner-Webb's winning streak right now? Knocking off one of the top Big South teams, Campbell, Richard.
That's impressive. It's always weird, though, because whenever, since I've been here, it's like Campbell plays good in Bowling Springs. We play good in Bowie's Creek. So it's kind of weird to see how that continues to go. But, yeah, that's a good win, especially with Gardner-Webb coming up to the toughest part of their schedule, probably. They'll host Longwood, then have a home game against Liberty, and then a game at Winthrop. You know, two teams that on top of the conference that they probably should have beaten.
Yes.
And so it's good to see them starting to roll now. And good thing is, they're starting to get better at the free throw line. At one point, you know, last in the nation. They've had several games. I remember over Christmas break, first game against High Point, first conference game against High Point, lost by 8. They missed 13 free throws. And you know, that's a 5-point swing in your direction if you win that game. And, you know, but I think it's amazing how technically this has been Coach Kraft's worst season at Gardner-Webb. But they're 13-11, 6-5 in the conference, and a win on the road against Nebraska, and almost knocked off teams like Pittsburgh, Eastern Michigan, and Kansas State. So the talent is there, and I think Gardner-Webb's starting to realize their potential and their talent. And I think this is going to be a very dangerous team in the conference, and could go really deep in the conference tournament.
I agree with you on that one. I've seen, from the beginning of the season, for what we saw, we've seen Gardner-Webb struggle here and there, but then they've starting to rise up. You know, like you said, Richard, they've got great talent. Tyrell Nelson, LaQuincy Rideau, Jamal Roberto, and just a lot of people like David Effiani coming off the bench, now being a starter. A lot, they do have a great team, and it's going to be interesting to see what you see. And like you said, a tough conference schedule so far. They got UNC Asheville, Liberty, and just a they have their next few games, they'll be playing 4 of the top 5 teams in the conference that are ahead of Gardner-Webb. So it'll be interesting to see how they finish. What about women's basketball? What have you seen from them so far, Richard?
Women's basketball, it's been kind of an inconsistency at times. Like the other day, they go off and a huge win at home against Liberty, but then go off and just lay an egg against Charleston Southern. So it's been one of those, like, man, you got to get a streak. They haven't really been a streak going. Good to see them, you know, knock off Campbell, knock off Winthrop to stop the losing streak. But, yeah, tough one against Liberty. They'll come back home for Longwood in an Education Day game. That one should take care of the Lancers in that one. But after that, you know, there's a bunch of toss-up games, like High Point. They should have beat them earlier in the year.
I agree.
Presbyterians should have beat them earlier in the year. Winthrop, they can probably beat them again. Radford, who they beat, who at times looked like they shouldn't have beat them early in the year. So the schedule does get easier after this Saturday's game at Liberty. It does get a little easier, so you can help your standing out in the conference tournament, so that way you can avoid maybe the Liberties or the Campbells or the Radfords at the in the tournament and kind of build your way up, get you some confidence. So it'll be interesting to see how they can close out, because right now they're still in good shape. I mean, they're 4-5 toward the bottom of the conference, but there's a bunch of teams. It's like 4 teams that are 5-4. So
yeah,
they have a shot, and I think they can, if they finish strong, they can finish strong and get a good seed in the conference tournament, and that'll help them out a lot.
Definitely. Will, what's your point on the women's basketball team?
I'd say that they've had a bit of a mid season, like an average one. Like what Richard said, that whenever they have a big win, they would end up going on a bit of a losing streak, and they need to start, learn to break that habit. I wouldn't call it a habit, but they need to learn on how to get back on the road.
So what do they need to do to finish this season off strong so far? I mean, you've got great players here. I mean, you've got Tierra, who's a great marksmith. They got the twins, Savannah and Carly, who have been playing very decently, actually. They've come up from where they started. And people like Evelyn, who has been suspended off the team for another game. But, like you said, the women are building up, and it'll be interesting to see what they do here. And I'm very excited to see what they've got going for them here. I mean, they're like a flower. They started out as a seed, but now they're starting to sprout up and starting to bloom with all the petals and everything. And so we'll definitely see how it goes here. Will, what were you going to say?
Oh, no, I was just going to say, from my observing of the women's basketball game against Campbell, they started out strong in the second half, or in the first half,
yes.
But then they started to lose steam a little bit in the second half, and they started to fall apart. And they've been doing pretty good, considering Campbell was 14-4. So I'd say keep up the pace and don't let up.
Definitely. That's definitely a great point. Another winter sport that's been doing really well, we actually played a pretty decent team, Duke. We were down 23-7 at one point, and ended up coming back, only losing by 1 point. What is y'all's take on that wrestling match? I don't know if you saw it or not, Richard, if you were...
I was there for the last half of it, and I would say that as soon as we got to like our more weighted people, that came out wrong. I'm very sorry. Didn't mean to say that.
Yeah, you did.
All right, but when we get to our big stars, then they started to pick up the pace a little bit, and that's when the rally started. And we did indeed only come up by one team score.
Mm-hmm.
But we should be looking forward to what should be a great match, which is coming up tonight against Tennessee Chattanooga. And one of the leaders of the wrestling team, Chris Vassar, who is 18-7 overall, 4-1 in the conference, and has a total of 5 pins and 2 technical falls.
It's really good, too. And wrestling is looking to be a strong sport for us here at Gardner-Webb. They're actually going to be playing UNC soon. So, and if I'm not mistaken, UNC is ranked in wrestling from what I've...
Yeah, I believe they are. I believe Duke might be as well, or at least near the top 25. But wrestling team so far has had some really good wins, some close losses. I mean, lost to Virginia earlier in the year by 4. Almost came back on them. Heartbreaker against App State, and then a tough one against Duke, and then really the only bad loss is South Dakota State, who's toward the top 10 of the nation, and a bad loss to SIU Edwardsville, which I have not checked into that, so I don't know how that one, but it was a close loss. So, but, you know, it seems like, observing, if you go through the matches, it seems like the lower weight categories have just not been as strong, and so when you have to start off down, it's kind of hard to come back, because like VMI, they beat 29-13, you're thinking, okay, well, it looks like they dominated. At one point, I believe they were down a solid 8-0 to start off. In the first two matches, they're down. I think one match ended in about a minute 54 seconds with a pinfall. So it was one of those where maybe the shock got to them. They're like, okay, we can do this. Calm down. They went out. But, you know, it'll just be interesting to see how they can recover. This is their last home conference match, and I believe it's not their last conference match. They have one more conference match against Davidson on the road, which they should be able to handle. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, App State was a huge win last year. So, you know, App State was motivated. It's always a great rivalry. And Chattanooga was the only team they lost to last year in conference. So they'll be motivated tonight. And I think they'll have a shot, but they're going to have to bring their A game and get out ahead early. And if you get down behind, just don't get shocked.
What have you seen from the spring sports? As it's, we've got 13 days till spring sports starts. What have you seen so far? You've been up close with the softball, baseball team. 4 baseball players were actually preseason All-American, if I'm not mistaken. What is your view on them?
Well, first of all, it's going to be interesting. Lacrosse actually starts today, which is interesting, against Limestone. They're kind of an interesting one because they don't have a lot of depth, and that's going to be hard to ask. And this happened their first year, that you're going to have to ask 11 players, hey, you got to go 60 minutes. And that's hard to do.
Yes.
For anybody, any team. So it's one of those where they're going to have to jump out early and score quick, which has been their problem the past 2 years. Has been offense. Defense has been fine. It's just you have to score quick. If they can do that, I think they'll be fine. But it'll be interesting to see how they can do that. They look pretty solid. The freshmen, they have seven new freshmen, and it looks like they're going to be a solid team. Softball-wise, they have a tough start against Upstate, who usually goes out there and is ranked at some point in the season.
Yes.
So that'll be interesting to see how they do. But then they come home for some fairly easy matchups, some winnable games, before they go off to the University of Alabama for a tournament. So that'll be a tough test for them. But favorable matchups. They get some teams at home that they think they have a shot at beating at home. Of course, tough games at Longwood, Liberty at home, at Campbell to end the season. But it'll be interesting to see how they can recover. They have a lot of players that'll be sitting out the first game because of different school reasons, like academic stuff. So first two games may not be a good indicator of how they're doing, because you're going to have to throw freshman pitchers in there and be like, hey, you got to play outfield now. So that may not be a good indication of their defense. Of course, it's going up against a team like USC Upstate. But they should be fine for most of the season. I think they'll do pretty well. And in baseball, it's going to be hard to top that season from last year. I mean, 37 wins, most ever in the school's D1 history. But a lot tougher schedule. You know, it's hard to go 13-0. Yes. I'll say that, especially in baseball when you're playing, you know, three games in a row. But Gardner-Webb did have a fairly easy schedule. And their first loss was to the University of North Carolina. So. Yeah. And so this year, the four-game stretch against Canisius, who's a solid team. I think Canisius either makes the tournament or gets close to the tournament every year. Then to North Carolina. Then App State. Then Wright State, who makes the tournament. And so you really don't have an easy matchup till Maryland, Baltimore County. And that's because we don't know anything about them much, being down here. So it's a tougher schedule.
Definitely.
You have Georgetown at home. You have a Western Carolina in a game which was like a home run derby last year. 25-mile-per-hour wins, people hitting home runs. Final score was like 14-18 or something like that. And, you know, and then you got tough conference games on the road at High Point. You have to go to Charleston Southern, which they just have such a weird stadium. Both of them and Longwood have just weird stadiums. You have to play Liberty this year. You have to go to the Presbyterian. The weird part of that one is Presbyterian is one of those stadiums where there's no lights, so you have to play early.
Wow.
On every day. And so you're playing at Friday at 3 o'clock. That can throw you off sometimes.
Yes.
Sometimes instead of having to wait all day. And then also in the middle of all your conference, you have to go up to Morgantown, West Virginia, to play the Mountaineers. So it's a tougher schedule. But the good thing is, one, there's no more Coastal, which is always good. But it's going to be a difficult one for them. And they lost a lot of their pitching, but their bullpen was strong. So it'll be interesting to see how those guys who've been moved up in the starting roles will do. And then the offense should be there, but the pitching is going to be key for them.
Definitely. I'm very excited to see what spring sports brings to the table. And you've also got track going on with people like Marcus Abraham, the thrower who's broke records last year, to break his own records. You've got great sprinters out there like Jordan Davis, senior, hoping to finish out her career here at Gardner-Webb Strong. So definitely, like you said, it's definitely going to be an interesting spring kind of day for sports. And coming up, before we head over to college basketball, what is football looking like? Of course, they had their first practice today at 4 in the morning. what do they look like? You know, you're losing Aaron Cook, Chad Jeter, Mike Estes, but you still got Tyrell Maxwell and Khalil Lewis. Defense is still looking okay. You've still got Tristan. Then what's your take on this?
Well, spring ball is going to be a bit different because we only have about five offensive linemen that are still here because of graduation, and we have two that are injured, actually, Will Milliken and Braden Briggs. So it's not going to be a lot of contact, but it's going to be a lot of speed. And that's really what we want to be about is speed. You know, the term running bulldogs comes from the speed, the running game. And so we want to be able to use that. You know, you still have Khalil Lewis. You still have all the running backs from last year. And we have like an armada of running backs. You have Tyrell, who knows how to run, and has developed his passing game much nicely.
Yes.
He's gotten way more accurate. Then wide receiver, you're losing Mike Estes is going to be huge, but wide receiver, you still have Jacob Henderson, mm-hmm. Ralph Jolly can stay healthy. You know, just a bunch of people who are mm-hmm. out there. Willie Jackson came on strong. It seemed like Willie Jackson had an amazing catch every single game, or at least a breakaway yeah. speed. And so and on defense, think about defense. You get most of the defensive line back. Losing PJ will be is huge, but still have Davis Nealon's coming back. Don yes. Manning's coming back, who blossomed last year. Josh Ramazur coming back. LaRon Glenn recovered from his injury. A linebacker, you're still going to have Corey Horn, who's out right now with an injury, but he'll be coming back, and he is just – he seems like he's in on every play, mm-hmm. no matter what. Safeties and all that, it's going to be kind of interesting to see because you lose some great safeties. You lose Jalen, who is transferring to the University of South Carolina, and wow. we wish all the luck for him.
Yes.
I mean, but losing the Big South Freshman Player of the Year is that's a tough one, but mm-hmm. it's going to be great. Kicking game, the toughest part is finding a long snapper. James Needham, underrated player yes. asset to the team. And so finding a long snapper,
mm-hmm.
Hopefully we're trying to recruit one if we can. If not, you know, someone may have to step up and come one. But Paul Schumacher, you know, placed in the top four in the FCS in field goal percentage.
Yeah.
And the only one he missed was a block, so not even his fault. Andrew mm-hmm. Komornik is sticking around for one more year, and so he's – Able, and we got some, so it's going to be interesting to see.
Mm-hmm.
I think I hate last year. Last year I thought was our best year to probably take the Big South Conference title.
Yeah.
And, of course, one play away from it against Liberty, for all fairness, because mm-hmm. with that we would have had Tyler Charleston Southern, who we beat,
mm-hmm.
and we would have won the conference. But just one play away last year, had several other games, non-conference games, that we should have won. So this year going to be a tough schedule as mm-hmm. well. North Carolina A&T rolling in here first week.
Wyoming.
It's a tough game. Going to Wyoming, who went to a bowl game, almost beat BYU.
Mm-hmm.
Going to North Carolina Central, who went to a bowl game for the HBCU
mm-hmm.
championship, and I believe they won it. Can't remember, but they finished toward the top 10 of the FCS.
Mm-hmm.
Wofford, who made a deep run in the playoffs, you know, and everybody thought they were out, and they had a bunch of freshmen that made a deep run. So that's going to be interesting to see. And then a long trip to Monmouth in the Big South play. That's always a long trip.
Mm-hmm.
And they always give us a good game. Like this year's instant classic, stopping them on the 1 yard line.
Yes.
Insane game. Charleston Southern, they're going to be interesting to see because, you know, they've lost most of their coaches, have left them, so they go to Coastal. So it'll be interesting to see how an interim coach works out. And
mm-hmm.
But the thing is, most of the quarterbacks, while we had the experienced quarterback last mm-hmm. year, most teams had inexperienced quarterbacks. Now those quarterbacks have a year under their belt, so it'll be interesting to see what they can do.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think we were the only one with a veteran quarterback last year. Maybe Kennesaw State, but they yeah. run the option, so he's not going to throw it much. So.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see Big South, what's going on there. 2 years getting North Alabama in, who's a D2 powerhouse.
Mm-hmm.
They went to the championship, lost to the other powers, Northwest Missouri State. So it'll be interesting to see this year. Mm-hmm. I think the Big South is a growing conference.
Yeah.
And I'd love to see it. Already have the deal done where Campbell's coming in as well when they
yeah.
receive scholarship football. So Campbell will be coming in a few years. They've made some strides. They mm-hmm. had, I think they had their first ever winning season last year. It went 6-5. So, and then we'll have to see. And they'll be thinking about adding Stetson, North Florida, or Florida mm-hmm. Gulf Coast, one of those teams. So it'll be interesting mm-hmm. to see what
yeah.
goes on this year. And I think we're going to be up to the challenge. This is going to be whether or not we make plays. So.
And this is why he runs GW Sports, guys. All right. So coming into college basketball, first off, the big topic: Gonzaga. Only unbeaten team left in the NCAA, number one for the first time in school history. They've got a lot of great things going for them here, including their best player, Nigel Williams, Goss. Will, Richard, what are your points on Gonzaga? Will, we'll start with you since you've turned the microphone.
All right. Gonzaga has definitely been a surprise to many teams, and for one reason, you can see why. They had a big win last night against BYU, 85-75, and they just continue to get better and better.
Mm-hmm.
And they may end up being a threat to the national championship, possibly.
I believe so, too. And definitely watching this team, it's been very interesting. They have a great coach. They've faced a lot of good teams and pulled it out in the end. They've got Santa Clara next up, which should be an easy win for them. You never know. College basketball is a mystery sometimes. Richard, what's your take on Gonzaga, if you've seen them?
Yeah, I've been able to check out Gonzaga sometimes. And they got a huge game coming up in 2 weeks against St. Mary's on the road,
mm-hmm.
which that's always a tough place to play.
Yes.
And so that'll be interesting to see how they do there. But the thing about Gonzaga is one of those teams you never feel comfortable with the tournament if they're good, and you never feel comfortable pulling – you never feel comfortable pulling for them if they're good in the tournament,
mm-hmm.
and you never feel comfortable pulling against them if they've not been as good. If they've kind of just, okay, they're ranked 20 and get in,
yeah.
they make it to the – it seems like they go to the Elite Eight.
Yeah.
But if they're one of those teams where right now, as they are, number one or in the top five, you're worried that they're going to get to the second round mm-hmm. and lose. And I'm worried it's going to be a situation like Wichita State a few years ago.
Yes.
They got the number one seed undefeated but had to play Kentucky in the second round. So I feel like it's going to be one of those. They're going to set it up where, okay, we'll give you that easy team. And, you know, we were talking earlier about Duke's struggles.
Yeah.
What if they put Duke and make it, okay, you got to play Duke in the second round. You go and prove it to us. Because Duke is one of those teams who could get an 8 or 9 seed this year.
Yeah.
Or a team that our team kind of like a kind of team on the border, kind of like a West Virginia team or something
yes.
like that. They could drop down to 8 or 9 and be like, and make sure they win and be like, okay, here's your proven game. Go win this game and then improve to yourself. Wichita State wasn't able to do it.
Yeah.
But I feel like Gonzaga, Gonzaga probably wouldn't be able to either because they have a lot of key. They're good inside. I will
yes.
say this. They're a really good inside team. I remember I was watching them last week against Pepperdine. It was having to be on. I think they had their center score the first 10 points, and all he did was just work. He just worked inside. And last night they have some good three-point shooters on their team. They've always been dangerous from three. But it's just one of those teams, you know, you feel weird about because
yeah.
I feel like they could go on the stretch. They could go off and beat St. Mary's by about mm-hmm. 20. And then the next day they play San Francisco, a team that has been notorious for stealing Gonzaga's mm-hmm. thunder every year.
Yes.
San Francisco has beaten Gonzaga in the West Coast tournament before and has cost Gonzaga some seeds. So
yeah.
it's just interesting to see what's going to happen. And then, of course, BYU is always a dangerous team.
Definitely.
And so it'll be interesting to see how Gonzaga can finish this out. Mm-hmm. I think they have a good shot at finishing out undefeated once they get past St. Mary's.
I think so, too.
But that's the thing about college basketball. You never know. That's the
never
great
know. It's a mystery. And who are the top four teams that you two would choose right now in the NCAA? Who are the top four seeds? If the season we're in today, the tournament were to start.
Well, after looking at Gonzaga right now, they're being led by this phenomenal junior, Nigel Williams-Goss, who has 15 points per game,
mm-hmm.
5 rebounds, and 4 assists per game. And they were definitely one of them. Baylor would be second.
Mm-hmm.
Then I would choose Villanova and North Carolina.
Definitely. Richard, who would you be your four top teams?
As of right now, I'd probably choose Gonzaga for sure. Baylor, too. Kansas is ranked third, but Kansas is just a weird team to
yes.
me, I think. Really, I would probably slide Kansas in. That fourth seed's weird because you have a bunch of teams that deserve it. You have Villanova, who arguably deserves to be, who probably will get it and probably
mm-hmm.
deserves it. But Louisville has come on strong
yeah.
in the last few months. West Virginia. Kentucky is actually playing worse, I think, than they have all year. So it'll be interesting to see how they do. They now have 4 losses, so
yeah.
and almost lost to Georgia of all teams at home.
I heard.
And then but North Carolina's starting to come up. Florida State and Butler have kind of fallen back a bit, which has been kind of disappointing. Same with Notre Dame.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be an interesting end to the season. But one of the teams I'm looking out for is number 25 Northwestern. They're the only team from a power conference that has
yeah.
never made the tournament. They're 18-4. And they just beat Indiana. And
yeah.
I think their only losses are to Notre Dame, Texas, Minnesota, and maybe Michigan State. That's the only
yeah.
bad loss they have. But they've gone off, and they're tied for first in the Big Ten right now. They have a huge game against Maryland coming up.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see. Hopefully Northwestern can get in. If they get in, that'd be the first time ever that and all the powerhouse teams would have gotten in.
Yes, and they were ranked for the first time since 1955.
Yeah.
It's huge for them here. Honestly, Will, you were going to say something it looks like?
No, well, Richard said that we should look out for Northwestern, and more rightfully, we should. There are some other teams, though, that we should be on the lookout for. Mm-hmm. For example, Oregon, who is 19-3, and they're ranked number 13 in the conference. They made it pretty well last year in the tournament, but they just came up short.
Yes.
Maybe this could be the game changer.
Well, they struggled at the beginning of the year, but it's not how you start, it's how you finish. I've seen them change up their game. They've gotten a little bit better, starting to get back on their winning streak. So definitely Oregon would be one team to mention. What about else?
I would also mention, let's see, how about Creighton? They were an unusual team to be in the top 25. They're ranked number 22, just below Duke, with an astonishing 19-3 record.
Yes, and they've upset teams like Butler and Xavier, who has fallen off the map. They started out so well and strong, and so it's so interesting to see. Creighton would be the one. Another one that we haven't mentioned that I really think people should look out for is Virginia, believe it or not. Yes, they've struggled a little bit, but you've got to remember, their defense is ranked second in the nation right now because they know how to stop you from getting in the paint. So I think if Virginia keeps up the pace, they could get to that. Definitely be a dangerous team in the tournament.
Yeah, there's a lot of good basketball games this Saturday. I mean,
yes.
Purdue is at Maryland. Virginia's at Syracuse. That's going to be a tough one just because that's just a tough place to play.
Yes.
That's why Syracuse has been struggling. Xavier is at Creighton. I know both teams kind of slipped up a little bit.
Yes.
Arizona at Oregon. Oklahoma State at West Virginia. Notre Dame at UNC. Kentucky at Florida. So
it's going to be really
UCLA at Washington. Even though Washington struggled this year.
Yes.
Good team. So.
They really are. And Washington, here's a tidbit I looked up. Washington upsets a ranked team in basketball at least one time each year. So that's definitely something to look out for. This could be it. It's now time for college basketball picks. Just like the games you were mentioning, we're going to start out with number 23, Purdue, taking on number 17, Maryland here. Both teams great with the offensive board. Purdue known for getting the most rebounds in every game. So who would y'all two choose?
I'm going to pick Maryland. They're starting to become a force to be reckoned with in the ACC, and I feel like they could run deep into the conference tournament. I'm going with the Terps.
I think I'm going to have to go with the Boilermakers. They lost a tough one to Nebraska the other night,
mm-hmm.
but... You know, knocking off Northwestern was a huge win for him. Caleb Swanigan seems to be leading that team in basically everything. And Dakota Mathias is going to just sling the ball. But I think Swanigan's going to be too much. Melo Trimble, it seems like for Maryland, Melo Trimble has to do everything.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't, then they get in trouble. So I think Purdue has a shot. It's a tough place to play. Maryland's always a tough place to play.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Purdue is able to sneak by and get a good road win.
Next, the other game we were talking about, Virginia versus Syracuse. Syracuse, yes, they've had their struggles, but they're not easy to play when they're at home. Who do y'all have?
This is actually a tough game for me. Both teams have been very impressive, and it is very tough to play Syracuse when you're in the Carrier Dome.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think Syracuse has been improving that much, so I'm going to go with Virginia on this one.
Syracuse just played a very emotional game on the road at NC State. Had to come from behind to win in overtime. I think they're down by 20 at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen Virginia in person against Clemson, another tough place to play against a tougher team, I think. And if Lyndon Parentes gets going, he gets going. I don't think there's anyone on that Syracuse team that can guard him. It's basically Tyre Lydon and everybody else for Syracuse. Yeah. I think Virginia, it's going to be close early, but I think Virginia's going to be able to pull away easy.
I'm going to take the Cavaliers as well. Like I said, defense, second in the nation, Syracuse with the struggle. I'm going Virginia here. Next, Iowa State. They've also struggled, but have pulled out some big wins in these last few weeks. Taking on Devontae Graham, Frank Mason III, and the Kansas Jayhawks, who had to come back from behind to beat Baylor the other day. And now took first place in the Big 12. Who do y'all have?
This is another tough one because Kansas has had a bit of an on and off season. And you would think that a team like them would be a threat to win the national championship, especially with all those players and with Bill Self.
Yes.
I say with the way they've been, they're going to struggle a little bit. But I say the Jayhawks will just slip away with a win.
Last time these two teams played last month, it was in Iowa State, which Iowa State is a tough place to play. And Kansas escaped with a 4-point victory. This time it's in Allen Fieldhouse. That's the toughest place to play, I think, in the nation. It's insanely tough. I think Kansas is going to get solid victory here and just start getting back on track because they've had some tough games. And
yes.
A big victory here would help them get back on track.
I agree with you. I'm going to go with Kansas. It's in this blow. Wow. I'm going to go with Kansas in this one because I feel like they're a good team. Yes, they're on and off this year. Iowa State, these last 3 years, they're a big basketball team these last 3 years. But this year they've just fallen, so I'm going for Kansas. Next, Kansas State has had a decent year. Now they take on a Baylor team who was mad about that loss to Kansas. Who do y'all have?
You said Baylor and Kansas State, right?
Yes, Baylor and Kansas State.
Okay, I'm going to go with Baylor, mainly because of Jonathan Motley, because of his field goal percentage. 51%. That's normally unusual, but yes. Apparently this guy is more special than we give him credit for. 16 points a game. I'm going with the Bears.
I got to go with the Bears. They're going to be, they've had a stretch of tough games as well, mm-hmm. having to play at TCU and tough Texas Tech team at Ole Miss and at Kansas.
Yes.
So it's going to feel great to get home. Kansas State is a tough team, but I think Baylor, just with the energy coming off that Kansas game, just the frustration of losing that game, knowing you had it in the bag.
Yeah.
I think Baylor's going to be able to just win this game. Mm-hmm. Kansas State has had some struggles too this year, and that would be Kansas State's fourth straight loss. So it's going to be tough for them, but I think Baylor's going to be able to get this win.
I think Baylor will end up winning this one too as well. Next, Xavier, falling off the map, takes on a 20-3 underrated Creighton team. Your pick, Will.
I'm going to go with Crane. Marcus Foster has 18 points, and Justin Patton has 6 rebounds per game. I'd say Crane can be a very underrated team and could go far.
Yeah, Creighton, of course, sad to lose, your best player, Watson, but especially in his senior year. But Creighton, had some slip-ups against Marquette and Georgetown, but I think that win against Butler gave him a lot of confidence, especially on the road. Meanwhile, Xavier, just kind of filling around the middle of the Big East at times, lost a bad game to Cincinnati. So it'll be interesting to see what they do. Mm-hmm. I think last time they played, it was in Xavier. Creighton got the win by 5. I think Creighton's going to be able to get this win, probably by about the same score. It's going to be a lot closer than people think. I think Creighton's going to be able to pull away for the victory.
I'm going to pull an upset here, and I'm going to say Xavier to upset Creighton. And the reason I say that, there's a big reason. Yes, Xavier has fallen apart, but if you look at how their three-point percentage game has done in the conference games, you look at how they do with teams that try to come in the paint to score, it's not very easy. Like, Creighton has had those games where they're just off the mark. If you think about it, if you remember the years where Duke was such a high three-point shooting team, but yet they would always, at times go for 4 and 15 in the three-point. Creighton has a tendency to do that. I think Xavier will use that to their advantage and upset them. Next, Arizona, number 5, takes on Oregon, who is trying to step back up. Who do y'all have?
Like I said before, Oregon should be a threat to a force to be reckoned with, and they could go far. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Arizona could pull out the win. Laurie Markham has been doing a lot. He has 16 points per game and 7 rebounds, and I just feel like he's going to get better and better. I'm going to go with the Wildcats.
It's kind of weird picking these teams out west because you don't really know about them if you're on the East Coast.
Yeah.
Oregon is coming off a bad loss to Colorado on the road. Arizona's been rolling. I think, the Forest is a tough place to play, but I think Arizona's going to be able to walk in there and get a solid victory. I don't think they'll blow them out or anything, but a solid maybe 8-point victory or so. So I'm going to have to go with the Wildcats.
I'm going to go with the Wildcats as well. Next, a top ACC matchup. It seems the ACC is like almost the best conference in basketball. Notre Dame takes on UNC at Chapel Hill. Not a very tough place to play, I might say. So who do y'all have in this game?
Chapel Hill is definitely one of the toughest places to play. I'd say close to Allen Fieldhouse in Lawrence, Kansas.
Mm-hmm.
So you would expect Justin Jackson, the star of UNC, who has 18 points a game, to come in and just dominate. But let's take a look at Bonte Colson of Notre Dame. He would normally average a double-double, 15 points per game and 10 rebounds per game. I think this is going to be a close one, but I'm going to pick the Tar Heels by 3.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yeah, it's been a close one because Bonzi Colson, he's been doing it all for Notre Dame, but Stephen Bastour, I don't know what's happened with him. It seems like if he's hot, he's hot. If he's not, he's not. UNC's a bunch of playmakers with Joel Berry, Kennedy Meeks, Justin Jackson. North Carolina needs to get a win here because both teams need to get a win here because North Carolina will start a brutal stretch that will start next week with this game against Notre Dame, next week against Duke, and some more top ACC teams coming in. Notre Dame is currently in a three-game losing streak, having to play teams like Virginia, Georgia Tech, and Duke. So both teams will need a win, and I think North Carolina is going to just play a little bit better. It's going to be a very close game. A three-point pick is a solid pick win for Tar Heels.
It feels like Notre Dame is in emotional distress at the moment with this streak that they're going on. They play well in the first half, and then they just bobble up in the second half, it feels like. And to win, you must finish strong, especially against a team like UNC. You've got Justin Jackson, of course, and Joel Berry, who has his on and off games, but manages to pull out, have done pretty well lately. So I'm going to pick UNC on this one. Finally, people are calling this the game of the week. Kentucky, who is on a bad stretch, take on a Florida team who's been surprising people. Y'all's pick?
Well, Kentucky has definitely been struggling, but I say this is their time for redemption. Malik Monk has 22 points per game. Idris Adebayo with 6 rebounds a game. And De'Aaron Fox with 5 assists per game. I think that Kentucky could be on a bit of a roll, but not enough to go deep into the championship.
Yeah, Kentucky, they need De'Aaron Fox to play. If De'Aaron Fox doesn't play, they struggle. He didn't play against Georgia the other night, and you saw they almost lost that game. Earlier in the year against South Carolina, he got injured, and South Carolina almost made a comeback in that game. Still won by 15 points, but able to pull away. But I think that's more of the talent difference between the teams instead. But no, Florida has the new arena. It's a tough place to play. But Kentucky feels like if they can get going, dealing with De'Aaron Fox, and if Malik Monk can just keep doing what he's doing, I think they'll be perfectly fine. They should be able to get this victory.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going with Kentucky to overtake Florida in this one. Now we take off one topic in college football. You know, signing day happened. A lot of surprises. Texas didn't get a lot, and more importantly, Clemson didn't get as much as people would expect, despite winning the national championship. And you would think quarterbacks wanted to come in, take the place of Deshaun Watson, wide receivers want to take Mike Williams's place. What's your thoughts on that, Richard?
Clemson's recruiting?
Yes.
It was solid, I think. You're never going to place Deshaun Watson, I can tell you that right now.
Of course.
But, you know, got Hunter Johnson, who's from Carver, Georgia, coming in. He's going to be fantastic. He's already enrolled, actually.
Yeah.
So he'll be there for spring practice. So, solid recruiting class, I think. Got a bunch of guys in-state, in-house. They're able to keep in-state, which is always good to get those guys. Again, you just got a bunch of guys coming in, especially on the defensive front. I feel like that defensive line is 7 players deep. I feel like they don't have to rebuild. They just reload. Is what it is. So, because if you're second string, you're playing the entire game most of the time.
Yes.
And so, big, huge defensive gains. Quarterback's going to be interesting to see because you're going to have Kelly Bryant, who's a stud out of Greenville, who's been under not only Deshaun Watson, but under Nick Schuessler, who was there for 5 years. You know, under Schuessler, who, despite being a backup, was one of the best backups in the nation, I feel like. He was a guy, he'd come in, you felt perfectly fine with him being quarterback. So it'll probably be the starter. You have Tucker Israel, who has had some injury issues, but then you have Hunter Johnson coming in, who could probably mess everything up. and then you have another quarterback coming in too, a few years from Texas. I can't quite place his name right now, but he's a good. I know Hunter Johnson. His first pass of the high school All American game was for a touchdown. So he knows what he's doing. He reminds me of Sunshine from Remember the Titans. looks just like him. So that'll be interesting to see. It's a fun fact about him, actually. My college and my high school, the quarterback coach at my high school went to his school and coached him as well. So it was pretty interesting to see that. I remember that when he committed, he put a picture up. I was like, I think I know that coach. And I sent it to one of my friends. I'm like, isn't that our coach from high school? He's like, yeah. I was like, okay, well, he produced the number one quarterback in the nation. So let's get him on. But solid recruiting class. It was a great day to be at Clemson. You get to watch all the stuff. Marty Smith from ESPN was there. He looked like he had a fun time. It was pretty fun to see that. And I think, you know, Clemson's going to be a solid team if they can get the quarterback issues worked out. They have a favorable schedule this year. The toughest road game is probably – the toughest road games are Virginia Tech and South Carolina. And South Carolina just because it's the rivalry game. But so they have a favorable schedule this year, so it'll be interesting to see what happens and what this class can do.
Well, what was your thoughts on recruiting day? You know, Alabama as well was number one as usual. But what's your thing on Clemson and the rise of USC and LSU?
Definitely some interesting choices. Like you said, Clemson didn't get all the people that they wanted. But I think it was also mainly because they wanted to give some of the more experienced players a shot. Because you know Dabo Sweeney is going to try to aim for that championship again.
Yeah.
And he needs all of the throwing power and rushing power he can get.
Yeah. But how do you replace someone like Deshaun Watson? I mean, Richard, come on in and tell us. How do you, like you said, you can't replace Deshaun Watson. But how do you try?
Basically, you try, I think, you know, like I said, you have people who know the offense there.
Yeah.
You just got to get people who are smart, you know, and maybe you have to do some more running back work. That was one thing I thought was weird that Clemson went away from that worked toward the end of the year and against Alabama. They started giving it to the running backs more, and that started to work a little bit. You know, you got Tavian Feaster coming up, who was a monster running back in high school, and even he showed some speed against Ohio State. He got against Ohio State and showed some speed.
Yeah.
So it'll be interesting to see how that works out. I think you have to do that, and I think you have to possibly just run the quarterback some more. But you know what? You got receivers coming back. You got Hunter Renfrow coming back. Deion Kane. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with the offense. And it may be one of those like they did earlier in the season. You know, trust your defense and then work with the offense for a little while. It's a good thing you start with Kent State and stuff. But then you got Auburn coming up right that next week, who was a very good team underrated team last year. So it'll be interesting to see how they do. Starting off with Kent State will help you out. And, of course, spring game always helps out a little bit.
Yes. We're going to head into the NBA topic as the show will be ending soon. Coach for the Spurs, Greg Popovich, tied the NBA record for most career wins with one franchise, capturing his 1,000th, 127th win, tying the Jerry Sloan, who legendary Utah Jazz coach. What are y'all's thoughts on that? Is Greg Popovich the best coach to ever coach the NBA?
I've seen Greg Popovich coach many times. I've seen him coach when I was a little kid. And even today, I think he is very impressive. I think he's probably the greatest coach of the modern era. Maybe not of all time, but he's getting there.
Yes.
Greg Popovich is interesting because in the regular season, you know, he's known for kind of sitting his players and resting them, and you kind of question it at times because you're like, this is a huge game, you know, he's done it against the Cavs, he's done it against teams like the Heat and stuff, and you're like, why is he sitting these players? But then you realize what happens because they come into playoffs, no matter where they are in the playoffs or at the end of the season, they need to make a run, and they are one of the most dangerous teams there. I remember them whenever, you know, they had the big three of Tim Duncan, Manu Ginobili, and Tony Parker, you know, they're able to do that.
Yeah.
And it's a big thing because Popovich is probably the most respected coach in the NBA as well. You know, he's taking over the USA Olympic team soon. So he's one of the smartest coaches. Just their passing is beautiful. If you watch the Spurs pass on a good offensive possession, they'll take about 18 seconds off the clock before shooting, and it'll just be passes, and the ball will not hit the ground. There was one thing, I think they had the ball touched eight different, ball was in people's hands eight times, and maybe seven dribbles the entire time. And I think three of them were on the drive to the hoop. So it is just a beautiful offense. He's an offensive mastermind, you know, and I hope he sticks around for a lot longer. You know, no one has ever brought up his retirement yet. I hope that he never gets brought up anytime soon, because it is just great to watch the Spurs play.
And he'll probably take coaching to his grave as well. And when you think of Greg Popovich, you can definitely say he's one of the best coaches of all time, if you can't say the best. Watching him over the years, it's been fun. He's like you said, he's a mastermind. He has a high IQ of how to play the game of basketball, and bringing up players like Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, Kawhi Leonard coming in, and they picked up LaMarcus Aldridge and Pau Gasol, who Popovich is working with to help them out even more. Because when you think of what LaMarcus Aldridge was at the Trailblazers to where he is now, I think he's more effective with the Spurs. And it's because Popovich has helped him out and trained him. He even gave Tim Duncan the chance to work with him more. You've got – Greg Popovich is a great coach. And honestly, if I were ever to have a dream team, he would be my head coach. You guys heard of the LeBron James and versus Charles Barkley feud. How Charles Barkley said LeBron was whiny and doesn't like to compete, wanting all these special players. And then LeBron, of course, comes back with a comment saying, I'm not going to let you disrespect my legacy. And talking about how you're just on TV now. You're nothing special anymore. You just need to learn to keep your mouth shut. Well, what is y'all's comments to this? Was it necessary for Charles Barkley to say such a thing? Or was LeBron out of line with how he retaliated?
I think both were a little bit over the line because I think it's safe to say that LeBron James is arguably one of the greatest players of all time, probably the best of the modern era,
because
He's been doing triple doubles pretty lately. Saying how he's whining and he doesn't like working with special players, that's a little bit disrespectful considering that basketball is a team sport. And LeBron, you know, he wanted to defend his honor. Like, he wanted to, you know, protect what he thought was right. And he just kind of went overboard a little bit.
Yeah, Charles Barkley is known for going on some of these rants and stuff, but I feel like, you know, LeBron's on the end kind of disrespectful, but it's kind of one of those things, we never heard this from LeBron in Miami. You never heard this from, you haven't heard this earlier, so I don't know what it is. It's really gotten into this new system that LeBron is. Maybe it's the frustration of losing 6 out of 8, because that hasn't happened much since he went to Miami and came back.
Haven't really
seen a team lose 6 out of 8.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things you kind of question, because, like, you just did this big deal to get Kyle Korver, one of the best sharpshooters in the NBA.
Yeah.
And now they're having tryouts for, you know, some team from some free agents, like I think
Mario Chalmers, Lance Stevenson.
Lance Stevenson, and there was another one I can't remember. But yeah, they're having tryouts for them, who are, you know, solid role players on the bench, you know. I don't know if it's because, you know, the Cavs have said they're not interested in getting Carmelo Anthony, which you think would have more frustration on Carmelo's end than anything. I know. You know, LeBron wants to have this dream scenario where he plays with, it's like him, Bosh, Wade, Melo, and Kobe at one point, but then Kobe retired. So he wants to have that dream scenario. We got four of them. They also said last year when they got rid of Mike Miller a few years ago, he was mad about that. But it was one of those things where they asked him, "Do you want Mike Miller?" And he said, "No, I don't care what you do." And they got rid of him, and he got mad. And it was one of those things. It's like, why don't you speak up for Mike Miller if you wanted him? So it's kind of weird on LeBron's end. You know, I think there was some disrespect on Charles Barkley. He did not attack the fact that Charles Barkley didn't win a ring, which I thought was surprising. He may have gotten caught up and forgotten about that.
Yeah.
But, you know, Charles Barkley said he stands by his comments. I think LeBron's going to say he stands by his. I think this thing's going to be done. Charles Barkley didn't mean for it to get personal, I don't think.
Yeah.
And so I think it's one of those things, you know, it's just done. It's over with. They'll meet up at All-Star Weekend and be happy. So,
in my opinion, but you're right, Barkley's known to run his mouth. Ever since the man got on TNT, the man does nothing but run his mouth. I don't know if maybe he's got that pride of he considers himself one of the greatest power forwards, which, in my opinion, he's not top five. Or the fact that he was on the Dream Team and started, but going back, you think about it, it was disrespectful. Honestly, but you've got to ignore people like Barkley, because you're going to have people like Barkley speak and talk, and you just got to go out there and play the game. All right, show him why you are considered one of the best of all time. Now, to me, you'll be second behind Michael Jordan, but you're probably going to surpass him soon. But honestly, though, I feel like this is out of fear. LeBron knows the Warriors have finally found a system to work all together. You know, you've got Kevin Durant and Zaza and David West. And I feel like that's fear. I feel like LeBron thinks we're not going to win a championship if we don't get better, so maybe we need more role players and everything. So that's what I feel like LeBron is doing. I don't think it's not the thing of not wanting to compete. I think he wants to match up with the Warriors. That's what my opinion, though. But talking about Melo leaving the Knicks, what would be the best-case scenario for him? I was thinking this morning, I thought, come to the Lakers, we need you. But then I thought about it, I was like, maybe the Thunder could use him. Because if you think about it, Westbrook can give you the ball easily, and you can just shoot, and it would be a systematic system. What do y'all think?
I had two options for Carmelo. First one was the Thunder, because a pair between him and Russell Westbrook would be unstoppable, and it would definitely fill in that hole that Kevin Durant left. And my second would be the Clippers, because think of the possibilities. You have Chris Paul, Blake Griffin, DeAndre Jordan. Why not add Carmelo Anthony to that mix?
Ooh. Oh. I like that, actually.
I've heard several things. I've heard maybe the Bulls, since they've had some stuff going on in their locker room. You know, but I don't think anybody's leaving the Bulls. That's why it's one of those things where if you don't have the money, so it's either, oh, we're going to give you McDermott, Miritich, and like four other guys, but it's like, but you can't touch Dwayne Wade, you can't touch Jimmy Butler. So it's one of those weird things where like they probably want him, but they don't want to give up the money for him.
Yeah.
One I saw that was pretty interesting and it's been turned down was the Boston Celtics, and I thought that'd be a fantastic one.
Ooh.
To kind of come in. Maybe you give up Jonas Jerebko, who even despite being a really good power forward, you give up some size, but you can put Melo in that role at the same time, and he can shoot some threes for you. You have Isaiah Thomas, Avery Bradley with you as well.
And Horford.
Al Horford, Amir Johnson, Kelly Olynyk. So you're not giving up anything. You're gaining a lot.
Yeah.
And getting rid of Jonas Jerebko would hurt a lot, but I think it'd be good. You'd probably even give up Terry Rozier, you know, a rookie, and he'd probably be able to shine in the Knicks. And I think it would work out. I think the Knicks really are trying to, because I think the Knicks have decided that their future is in Kristaps Porzingis, who has just, despite everything the Knicks have gone through, despite the Knicks being not a very good team and having all this instability, Kristaps has been a very good player, very consistent player. And if he doesn't, and for some reason if he doesn't score, he will get the rebound and he'll play defense for you. So it's interesting to see how the Knicks will go with this. There's been a lot of turmoil in them for years now. And so it'll be interesting to see what they do.
Now we go on to the big topic, the biggest game of the year. Before we get to that, we're going to the NFL topic. You know, the Colts punter, Pat McAfee, you know, he retired at age 29. What do you feel was the reason on that? Maybe he was just done, ready to just live the rest of his life out? I mean,
I'd say maybe because he wasn't happy with the... where he was at, or maybe he just didn't feel like it was being paid well enough. But either one of those is a valid reason, but it's still pretty shocking to know that a player of that age is going to call it a career.
He came out and said in his letter that he's had 3 knee surgeries in 4 years. So, and, you know, as a punter, that's even worse because, you know, either one knee you got to use is your plant foot, the other one you're actually kicking. So I think that's one of the reasons. Also, it's one of those things where I think you're seeing a lot of people just retire early because of the injuries. They want to be able to have a good life when they move forward. There was a linebacker for the Ravens who retired, and he's only 25, because he got injured. Calvin Johnson retired recently, and he only played for about 8 years. So it's one of those things where I think a lot of people are trying to choose safety. Of course, wish McAfee the best in his future.
Definitely.
Of course, I know he's he struggled, and probably with the Colts struggles, you know.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think, but dude is a hilarious guy. he's a stand-up comic. If you find any of his stuff, it's hilarious. Barstool Sports, what he's going to be writing for, has a new show on Comedy Central. They'll probably use him to his fullest potential on that show.
Yes.
He's a fantastic guy from everything I've seen about him, and he'll do well. He'll do well. I just hope Marquette King do not retire, because we don't want any of the fun, because after that there's no fun punters left. So we need to keep all the fun punters as long as possible.
Yes. And like, I agree with what you said. I mean, maybe he felt like it's like to retire, live your life. Calvin Johnson came out and said, "I love playing the sport of football, but I want to be able to come up and be able to pick up my son and give him a big hug. And I feel like if I were to get injured, seriously injured, I would not be able to do those things," is what he's come out and said. So you see that a lot. The injuries are getting extensive. So a lot of players feel that way. But that'll be a topic for another time. Now, before we get to the Super Bowl topic, on the NFL Awards, who wins MVP on Saturday? You've got these following. David Johnson, running back out of Arizona. Tom Brady, quarterback out of the Patriots. Derek Carr, Ezekiel Elliott, Aaron Rodgers, and Matt Ryan. Who wins the MVP?
Ooh, these are some tough choices. A lot of people will say that Tom Brady will win it, considering he's been suspended for 4 games and then came back and won almost all of the games he's been back, except with the exception of that loss to Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there's going to be a surprise in this one. I say that's going to be Aaron Rodgers of the Packers.
I can see that totally happening.
I'm going to probably have to say it's going to be interesting, because you have Aaron Rodgers, who did so great with hardly any receivers.
Yes.
David Johnson, you know, rough year for the Cardinals, you know, doing all of that. I feel like, unfortunately, he's going to get pushed to the side, because MVP awards have become more about the team, even though it should be about just the player.
Yes.
I feel like those have become more about the team. So he'll probably get pushed aside because of that. Matt Ryan has been fantastic. But he does. He has Julio Jones with him. I'm gonna think, and regardless of that, he's still been fantastic. I just feel like Tom Brady's gonna get it, because to do that in 12 games without Gronk, mm-hmm. and with Edelman kind of limping half the season, Martellus Bennett hurt most of the season as well.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when there were games I would watch, Patriots were on. I couldn't name one receiver, and he was just throwing darts to him. And it's just one of those things where you hardly ever see Brady get hit.
Yeah.
And it's partially because the offensive line is solid, but also because he knows when to throw it. He knows when to get rid of it. And I feel like they're going to look at that. You know, and of course, maybe people are going to say, so is some bias from Roger Goodell. I don't think there is. I think Roger Goodell's gotten over all the Deflategate stuff and whatever. I think you have to give it to Brady, but I think Brady's the best choice. Mm-hmm. But I feel like Matt Ryan has a very solid case. All of them have a solid case, but I think Matt Ryan's probably the second solid. But Tom Brady, I think, is probably going to get it.
You know, Tom Brady probably will get it, but I think about it. Matt Ryan, Aaron Rodgers, Ezekiel Elliott. Sadly, David Johnson will get pushed aside. Derek Carr got injured at the end of the year, so they're probably going to push him too, sadly. I think the player that played every game this season, that would be Aaron Rodgers, Zeke, and Matt Ryan. Because think about him. Yeah, Tom Brady had great stats, but the dude missed 4 games. And to get the MVP, is that really fair? Because he's Tom Brady. That's what I feel like. I feel like if anyone deserves it, it would either be Matt, Aaron, or Zeke. And I'm going to give it to Matt Ryan. I feel like they're going to give him that chance. He's played all 4 games. He's been exceptional. Yes, Aaron Rodgers played with no receivers. I mean, Jordy got hurt. Randall Cobb got hurt every now and then. And then Zeke coming out of here as a rookie running back, dominated this year. Very great to watch him play, even as a Cowboy fan. But I'm going to give it to Matt Ryan, honestly. I think he deserves the MVP. And, of course, defensive rookie and offensive rookie coach of the year. It'll be interesting. I think Bill Belichick wins coach of the year. I think Von Miller wins defensive player of the year. I think Joey Bosa for defensive rookie and offensive rookie. I give it to Dak Prescott. All right, so, big boys, it's time. For the biggest game of the year, the Atlanta Falcons, Matt Ryan and Julio, on a great stretch, finally have made it to where they wanted to be. Face against a guy who's been here many times, great experience in the Super Bowl, Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Who wins this game?
This is going to be a very exciting game. You have a high-octane offense going up against a very high-scoring defense. I think this will come right down to one final play, but I'd say, in the end, the Falcons will take down the Patriots and take their first Super Bowl back to Atlanta.
This is going to be an interesting game. This has potential to be the highest-scoring Super Bowl ever. Vegas is reporting it. The over-under is at 60 points, which is insane for an NFL game. You know, it's interesting stats have been, you know, when Julio Jones doesn't play that well, the Falcons are 6-0 still.
Yeah.
And it's one of those where it's like, the Patriots will take away something from you. And it's one of those, do you take away Julio Jones or you take away the rushing game? Because something is going to hurt you. Patriots, big thing, you know, they have some banged up offensive linemen. They don't have Gronk. But somehow Tom Brady has been good enough. The thing is, they have experience. They know what they're doing. And, you know, you may have some of those guys on the Falcons team, they have maybe, I think they have 3 players with Super Bowl experience that start.
Mm-hmm.
And while one of those is Dwight Freeney, it's kind of interesting to see, you know, if it gets to a high-pressure situation, how will they respond?
Yeah.
Also, defensively, overall defense, I think the Patriots are better, despite the Falcons having the way better defensive line with Grady Jarrett, Vic Beasley, Dwight Freeney. But, you know, it's going to be one of those things. It's going to come down to the wire. It's a weird thing, though, that I feel like the Patriots would not be favored in a field goal matchup because Matt Bryant can kick it from anywhere, despite Steven Gaskowski has been solid, too, this year. But it's one of those things. It's going to be a great game. It's going to be a really good game. I just feel like, for some reason, that the Patriots have got it this year. I feel like they do.
Yeah.
I feel like if it comes to a last drive, I wouldn't want Tom Brady. It may be one of those things where Patriots win, but Matt Ryan or Julio Jones is going to get MVP.
Yeah.
Because they will play a great game. I feel like with the experience and just with Bill Belichick is one of the smartest dudes out there.
Yeah.
I think the Patriots will come down to the final play probably, and Patriots will be able to get the win in a fantastic Super Bowl game.
you look at both teams. We, of course, you know what the Patriots have. Their defense with Mitchell in the backfield, they got a great backfield, honestly. And they were able to hold off Antonio Brown in the last game against the Steelers, the AFC Championship. You've got a great offense. Like you said, Brady knows how to get the ball to receivers. You saw Chris Hogan come out of nowhere. Rookie Malcolm Mitchell out of Georgia get a bunch of great catches. All because Brady is very experienced in knowing when to throw the ball, to trust his receivers. Now let's look at the Falcons. Like you said, defense. Vic Beasley, Dwight Freeney, who's going to retire after this game. You've got a lot of great players. Trufant on the backfield. Let's look at the offense. We talk about Julio and Matt Ryan, but we're forgetting about Mohamed Sanu, Jacob Tammy, two great running backs who can run and catch, Devontae Freeman and Tevin Coleman. It's going to be a high-scoring game. I really do. I think it's going to go to the 40s. It's going to come down to the wire. I'm going with the Falcons to upset the Patriots in the last second play. I really think it's going to come down to that wire. And with that being said, we'd like to thank Richard for joining us and giving his sports intellect. It's been a really fun show.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for having me on here.
No problem at all. I'm TJ.
And I'm Will.
And this was
Real Talk Sports.
See you next Friday.